As we do every Friday on Scoops with DannyMac.com, we have the chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and there is a ton of baseball to get into as the World Series has finished up. Tony La Russa is now the manager of the Chicago White Sox. We have Mizzou in Florida tomorrow in football, so plenty to get into. Ben Fredrickson, always good to hear your voice. How are things?
I'm good, man. Good to be with you. Good to catch up. Plenty to discuss between the World Series and Tony La Russa, Colton Wong. We got a lot to cover in a short amount of time here, man.
Well, let's jump into, first and foremost, Colton Wong. The Cardinals decide not to pick up the $12.5 million option. They need offense. They looked at the 675 OPS, and they said, Colton, we know you're a great defensive player, and he is, but they're looking for offense. They're looking for payroll flexibility. So they're going to go into a different direction. What did you think of this move?
Well, I think right away it makes them weaker at their biggest strength, which is run prevention. I do think it's a kind of a sign of the times. I think in a normal year that option is snapped up immediately, no questions asked. But there are going to be a lot of players, and we're already seeing this come to pass, that are in Colton Wong's position, where what used to be no-brainer options are now. All of a sudden, anything but. The Cardinals, if they do use the flexibility to go out and create offense and boost this lineup that has struggled now for two seasons, then I think people will understand. If they don't use it to go add offense, then I think people have a right to be frustrated, because in a vacuum, all that happened was the team took away a bit of a strength. Took away an important piece of its biggest strength, and there's been no real commitment that they are going to go, boost that lineup. At least that wasn't what John Mozeliak said in the Wong press conference, or teleconference, I guess I should say. They're clearly going to look at ways to improve, but we also heard about declining payroll, and we heard a lot about, this increased continued confidence in Jeff Albert, the hitting coach. But I think a lot of people are saying, okay, the defense took a step back now. The Gold Glove second baseman is out of the picture. I think it's pretty unlikely that he's back on a deal. What's going to be done about this lineup now that has lagged for two consecutive seasons? So it's TBD, but right now I think a lot of fans are going to miss Colton Wong. He was an exciting player. We saw him kind of come into his own. The offense was down a bit this year. It was also at a career high just a season ago, which was the most recent full regular season he had. I think he was kind of finding a groove as an offensive player, and his defense was clearly spectacular. So right now they're a worse team without him. We'll see what they do with the flexibility they created.
In terms of some of the other subjects that John Mozeliak covered with the press conference, just what stood out for you? I mean, he covered the Wong situation. He went into wanting to bring back Molina if it can work out. There was a lot of talk about the coaching staff remaining intact, bringing them back. What else stood out for you as you listened to John?
Well, I think Mo did a good job of getting out in front, not getting out in front of it, but addressing the Arozarena issue that had to be touched on at some point. It does sound like the Cardinals are willing to acknowledge the fact that they underestimated this guy, which of course they did, but it's always good to hear that acknowledged. And I think the more important than just eating crow on a decision that didn't work out, I mean, baseball is all about decisions that don't work out. I mean, that's why 300 hitters are in the Hall of Fame, right? But I think the commitment to figuring out what exactly misfired there, why were bets cast on certain outfielders and not this one, I think that's what the Cardinals have to try to dig into, because they have a long successful history of not making bad reads, especially on their own guys. And I'll give Mo credit for saying, look, I've said all along that we have to be right about our own players, and that's the most important thing. And there have been some breakdowns in that. I think I would put the Luke Voit one in that as well. That's not a knock on Paul Goldschmidt, but I do think that the Cardinals maybe underprojected what Luke Voit could be as a major leaguer. So there are a couple of examples that really popped this year of guys that maybe they didn't figure out a way to either unlock the best in them or didn't give them enough opportunity to really thrive at the major league level. And they've got to figure out why that's happening. Because the Cardinals are going to be a draft and develop team. And if they're not getting good projections on their own players, and then that's going to be a problem for the way that they do business. So that they've got to get some production there. But you know, we heard a lot about the other takeaway. I think there was kind of the outlook for this off season. It's not just going to be the Cardinals that are talking about how this pandemic affected things. There's going to be a big debate. We're already seeing Trevor Bauer, your favorite pitcher, lead it on Twitter about the kind of ramifications that this free agency period is going to have. There's a big, big fight coming after the 2021 season with the collective bargaining agreement, and there will be a lot of politics played this offseason about what is the result of the pandemic and what is the result of kind of setting the line for these future labor negotiations. Baseball is a big business, and it is a business that is affected by the pandemic like everything else. It's also a business that has operated in very successfully for every year up until the pandemic hit. So there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of claims about what is truly an adjustment in business due to a bad year and what is owners maybe trying to get out ahead of this collective bargaining agreement fight. So it's going to be a very cold, long off season, but it will certainly be an interesting one, I think.
You mentioned long, and that is something that John Mozeliak talked about, being patient. And patience a lot of times means the result of sometimes getting deals. And it looks like by already just seeing the first 48 hours or so, you know, a lot of guys like Wong, like some others, not seeing those options picked up. And you have to wonder if the Cardinals are going to jump on some of those guys that are available to upgrade this offense.
Well, here's the thing is another team is looking at Colton Wong going, man, we can maybe get this guy for a bargain deal that could really shore up our defense. Just like that, the Cardinals are going to be looking at some of these guys who are getting the same fate as Colton and saying, man, they could add some punch to our lineup that has been the lowest in slugging percentage in each of the past two postseasons. You know, you look at Eric Thames and wonder what he might be able to do in St. Louis on an affordable deal. What about Nelson Cruz? I mean, you got to figure out if you're going to have, you know, a DH spot for him. But there wasn't that long ago where the Cardinals were really interested in, you know, everybody thought Adam Eaton could be a good fit. There will be an opportunity for teams like the Cardinals to improve their lineup in terms of slugging and power without breaking the bank with some low risk, you know, potentially high ceiling deals. And I think the Cardinals have to look into that. If they're going to have fans in the stadium at all in 2021, they've got to do something to upgrade the power potential of this offense. Now, you don't do it and just give away your strength of defense and pitching, but you have to try to find ways to add some thump to the lineup if you're going to want to sell a contending team to fans.
Tony La Russa back in Major League Baseball as a manager at the age of 76. What was your reaction to this?
Well, we kind of saw it coming, right? I mean, hey, I think we got to give ourselves a little credit here in St. Louis. I felt like the conversations you and I were having, what we were writing in the newspaper, I'll give Bob Nightingale a lot of credit for being way out in front of it. But we were all kind of seeing the same thing. This made sense. We thought this could be a fit, and it certainly was sounding like people who knew Tony and had been around him were thinking that this might be something that he wanted to jump back into. I kind of felt like we were the only ones getting those vibes because Chicago and the folks there didn't seem to be taking it seriously. Well, it was something they should have maybe been taking a little more seriously. I was surprised when the news came out how universally it seemed like it was criticized. I knew it would be a mixed reaction. And I think we're clearly, you know, here in St. Louis, more familiar with what Tony can do in that role. But it just seemed like there's a lot of misinformation about Tony La Russa. There's this revisionist history that suggests that he doesn't like or care about analytics. That's not true. He was one of the pioneers of analytics. He and Dave Duncan were using analytics before anybody knew what they were. There's this misconception that Tony La Russa hates bat flips and can't stand any emotion being put into the game. I mean, you, Dan, have called games many times where Albert Pujols has flipped a bat, and I don't think he got benched the next time. I can find quotes from 2006 where Tony's defending Albert Pujols and his bat flips. Now, there might have been times where he said, hey, I didn't like this or I didn't like that. guess what? Sometimes managers, they don't like it when guys bat flip against their teams, but they're okay with their players doing it. That's not being anti-bat flip. That's just being a manager. that's sticking up for your team and getting maybe fired up when another team does something similar. You know, that's kind of what managing is about in a lot of ways. So the same guys who will defend showboating teams will get mad when someone does it to them. That's just human nature. I will say this, La Russa has said some things that he's going to have to answer for. You know, he has been critical of players, you know, protesting during the national anthem, and he's been critical of Colin Kaepernick. And I knew that was going to be a big question when you got to play, when you have players who exercise their beliefs in that way. Totally fair question. And I thought he answered it well. He was asked when he was introduced, what do you think about this? You've made some comments that would seem to conflict with some of the new players that you're going to be managing. I thought his answer was great. He said, I've learned. I understand better now. My perception has changed. Well, that's kind of what we're asking people to do, right? So ripping him for something he said years ago and not factoring in the things he's saying now, I think that's kind of an unfair way to do it personally. I think Tony can do well at this job. I think the players that he manages are gonna love him. And I think that the fans who are maybe cold on this idea will maybe change their opinion if he can do what he wants to do with this team.
You've answered a lot of that, what I have questions about. And basically a lot of things that I believe in too. I believe he was a pioneer of analytics. Bat flips, look, I saw it a lot with Albert Pujols. I saw it with Ricky Henderson. I saw it with Dave Henderson. How about managing a controversial player? I don't know. Jose Canseco might fall into that boat.
Right.
The media, he's going to be fine with the media. He handled it great today. He has been interviewed countless hundreds, thousands of times. He knows how to deal the post-game interviews, the pre-game stuff. He's in tune with the Chicago media for the most part because he knows a lot of those guys. I would think that that's a fair statement. Would you agree on that part too with the media?
Well, the group's probably changed a lot.
A little bit, yeah.
But he's not gonna be able to not handle. He's gonna handle himself just fine.
Yeah.
I would tell those guys they better bring it though.
Oh yeah.
Because one thing about Tony is he's okay with the question, but he might have one back for you.
So here's my number one question, I guess, would be, can he relate to the players of today? Because the players of today from 2011, I think a lot of people would agree, it's a short amount of time. It really is. 2011 seems like yesterday. But in the world of baseball, man, the game has changed so much, even with the player. I wonder, can he relate to them or manage them? You know what I mean? Deal with the day-to-day with them, those kind of things. That would be, I guess, my number one question with this.
I think that's a totally fair one. And you're not going to know, right, until he's back in the dugout and having a chance to be around these guys. I'll say this, when I talked to him entering this season, you know, people, I think there's a misconception that he's just been out golfing or reading books in a hammock since he retired from managing the first time. That hasn't been the case. He's been in different front offices. He's been involved with player decisions. It's not like he's been, you know, detached from the evolution of the game. He talked after the pandemic or during the pandemic about watching, you know, Mike Trout and how it's really compared. He's comparable to Albert Pujols in his mind and getting a chance to know him. So he's had relationships with players. He still has managed guys who are still playing. So it's not like if any of those guys on the White Sox need a feel for what he's like, I'm sure they can get a hold of Yadier Molina and ask. Yadi would, you know, go to war for Tony La Russa still, which makes that maybe an interesting conversation about Yadi's free agency. If it gets to that point, I still think he'll be back with the Cardinals. But my point is, it hasn't been that long. It has changed. But I think Tony is also, you know, he's always been in some ways more of kind of a player's manager than he got credit for. Now, there have been guys who didn't mesh well with him. That's well documented. But there have been a lot of guys who might not have get along with every manager who would play hard for him too. So he's going to have to find a way to relate to these guys, but I do think he will have instant respect with them. And I think, you know, too, when they find out a little bit more about him, when they talk to some guys about him, when they find out he speaks Spanish and that he can communicate with them on that level. There's a lot about Tony that's maybe a little more deeper than a lot of folks who don't know him realize. He's a character He's clearly polarizing at times, but I think these guys, if they are open to getting to know him, I think they're going to like what they find.
I agree. I want to ask you about the World Series. We saw analytics come into play big time. Tampa Bay, hey, they got there analytically based, but then analytics reared its ugly head in this decision with Kevin Cash to pull Snell. Now, we don't know if he kept Snell in the game, what would have happened third time through. However, the facts were this. Low pitch count, throwing high 90s, had thrown nearly 30 fastballs. None had been put in play. He's cruising along. The Dodgers would later say, thank goodness they pulled him. It doesn't work out. They lose the game. World Series over. It goes to the Dodgers. So I guess the question, the big picture on this is there a place for analytics and sabermetrics? Absolutely. I mean, all sports are going to that. And it doesn't matter what major sport you're talking about. They're all into it. And baseball is at the forefront of it. So there's analytically based decisions all the time in the game. However, there is the eye test and the human element. And I would hope it would swing the pendulum back just a little bit to where people say you have to make that choice with the human element, with a at the bare minimum. I would have loved to have seen just a discussion with Blake Snell and with the catcher, and they said, hey, we're at least thinking this. What do you guys think? Now, I know that what their answer is going to be, but I want to get a true response and read my pitcher and read my catcher and have a decision that's coming from the human element, because the analytical element and then the decision to bring in Anderson, that was not the right move, and no one can convince me otherwise. Even if it worked out, it was not the right move.
Well, I don't like analytics becoming a negative word.
I don't either. I'm an analytics guy.
No, I'm with you, and you do a great job of using it. You incorporate it into your broadcasts, and you're not a guy who says, "Hey, analytics equals bad." Here's the thing, and I think we agree on this. Analytics can lead you up to the decision. Analytics can flash the warning light and tell you to put your hand on the button. Analytics never presses the button. It never pulls the lever.
Good way to put it.
It directs you toward it. But in that moment, you don't get to say analytics did it. No, you did it with the information that you had. There's other kinds of information than third time through a lineup ERA and velocity and you know, all that stuff. There's talking to your catcher during a mound visit. There's looking in the guy's eyes and seeing what his reaction is when you ask him if he's got it. Now, people can snort and say that doesn't matter, that's not important. Well, here's the deal. And speaking of Tony, it's the man, not machine thing. Part of that job, as long as that job exists, until we're all just, you know, watching computerized robot baseball written by computerized robot baseball writers, is going to be the human element. And in that moment, Cash's decision was to trust the numbers over the human element. And it was a mistake. So to blame analytics, no, that's almost like a scapegoat here. Cash should be blamed because he valued that information over other kinds of information. The whole point of this is to blend it. And the Rays lean more toward the numbers and the projections than others. And you're right, it was part of the reason they're there. And if his decision is, hey, look, we got here by using this method, and that's why if it's in a make or break moment, then I'm going to go with what got us here, I can kind of respect that. But it doesn't mean that it was the right decision. And it still was the wrong decision. So, you know, he's got to live with that. And you know, he's lucky to some degree that Justin Turner immediately made him less of a story, because I don't think that's going to go anywhere. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about, you know, managers leaving guys in too long in the playoffs, but we have to. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to just rip him off here, but people should go find the explanation and the video that Tim Kirkjian did, where he explains, like, we have gotten away from using these starting pitchers. And, you know, how does it make sense where relievers who are relievers because they can't be starters are now, you know, more important to postseason than starters? That's backwards. That doesn't make sense. If that was the case, if you wanted those arms in those spots, they would be starters. So unless we're just going to abolish starting and have it just pitchers, then we need to maybe rethink this a little bit.
In terms of, and you just hit on this, and I'll wrap up the World Series here, and then we'll go to a little college football, but the Justin Turner situation, awful look for him. It's irresponsible. And you got to wonder, Ben, going forward, you know, what happens with Justin Turner and what does it do with other teams looking to sign him? I would wonder if there are some front offices, and I believe there will be, that say, you know what, I love him, and I'm sure he's a good guy. By all accounts, he's done everything right with the Dodgers, but, man, that was about as bad a look as you can have. It was a bad look. There's no other way to put it, and it was irresponsible for what he did.
Well, it was a bad look with what we saw live, and then it has become worse the more we found out about it. When we were found out that he was told not to go out there and he ignored it, and then he was told, hey, please leave for these reasons, and he ignored that too. You know, I think it really, not to go too big picture here, but it's kind of probably a big reason why we're having this much trouble with the virus in general. We all have been, some more than others, Justin Turners in our own lives. You know, we want to do what's convenient for us in the moment and let the consequences fall as they may. And we, you know, as Americans seem to feel very comfortable taking risks that we can justify. And that was one that he felt very strongly he could justify. It would have been a lot better if he would have kept the damn mask on when he was out there. He didn't. The Dodgers seemed to ignore that. The image that drove me crazy was him next to Dave Roberts, who's a cancer survivor, and all kinds of mitigating, you know, risk factors that could make him more vulnerable to the virus if he interacted with it. That was a tough image to see. And, you know, there just doesn't seem to be a willingness by the Dodgers to realize how, not just how bad the optics were, but just how senseless it was. I get it, man. You won the World Series. He means a ton to the organization. He's this legendary Dodger. But, man, it was selfish. It came across as selfish. And I don't know. I mean, that's a good question that you bring up about could it hurt him as a free agent. I don't have any information on that. I think it would come up if I was interviewing him as a free agent. I would want to know how he explained it, or maybe if there's something I didn't know. But man, it is. I like him a lot. I used to wish he'd be with the Cardinals. You know, before he signed that previous contract with the Dodgers. But really, really boneheaded moment for what everybody believes that I know to be a really smart and talented and likable baseball player.
Mizzou, Florida tomorrow. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what, Dan. If you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said this is a blowout by the Gators. However, I think the spread's down to 13, and I'm picking Missouri to cover for a few different reasons. One, Florida hasn't practiced in 2 weeks leading into this week because of their COVID situation. They're back on the field now, but we don't really know who exactly will be on the field for them. So they're in a bit of a spot where things are up in the air. And I think Missouri's really confident. You've had back-to-back games now with two really well-executed and well-planned games by Eli Drinkwitz. You beat LSU in the upset through the air. You have some really advantageous plays by a defense that makes a goal line stand to win the game. You have a bye week there. A week after that, you beat Kentucky by ground and pound, where the defense dominates and the offense just chews up yardage on the ground. So dynamic, different wins over teams that were favored to beat them. So they're in a good spot headed to the swamp. This is going to be one of those games that we don't know exactly what it will look like and if it will even happen until it kicks off because of the COVID uncertainty with Florida. Florida's offense is outstanding. They're putting up a ton of points. Kyle Trask, their quarterback, he throws it to everybody. He's got a great tight end. Missouri's defense is going to have to get some pressure on him. You got to get some sacks. That's been a weakness so far this season. They got to agitate the quarterback. They need to pick off a pass or two. The secondary has been good and better since that Tennessee game, but they need to at least get an interception or two in this game because of how much Florida will try to throw it. So those are the keys, but I think Missouri's got a good chance of keeping this close and maybe pulling off another upset.
Wouldn't that be something? Hey, Ben, appreciate your time. We'll catch you up next Friday. Great stuff, my man.
Sounds good, man. Talk to you soon.
That's Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's been a busy week here on the website. If you're a baseball fan, you would love it. Mike Shildt one-on-one, Adam Wainwright one-on-one, and also Jack Flaherty as well with Chris Raby. This is Scoops with DannyMac.com.